Welcome to Beyond Approaches. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tex Lerzel.
I come to you from Flatbush, Brooklyn, where I'm recording on land belonging to the Lenape Nation.
And I come to you from the D.
Oh my God, no.
From Detroit, where I record on land belonging to the Ojibwe, Ottawa, Potawatomi, and Wyandot Nations.
Yes, and these nations are just a few of very many out here doing their thing, and we like to acknowledge that. This
facts
is
are facts,
the show.
America.
Facts are facts, America. This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
That's
and
true.
And we be drinking, and we be swearing.
Fuck yeah. I did it.
Insult after insult. It's all right.
Yeah, today we are drinking. Drum roll, please. That's not a drum roll. I don't know what the fuck that was. That was like a Ned Flanders drum roll.
Totally.
<Doodaloo. laughs> Today we're drinking Cosmos.
Yes.
Ooh. There are very few cocktails out there that are more immediately recognizable than a Cosmopolitan. This blush pink cocktail in a martini glass with this sweet tart blend of vodka, triple sec, cranberry, and lime juices is so well known. Everyone out there listening has probably had a Cosmo, probably loves a Cosmo and has had several many of them.
Yeah.
I have been wanting to talk about the history of the Cosmo for a long time. They were around a little bit in the 80s. They were around in the 90s, but I wanted to wait specifically for a story that happened either in 1999 or the early 2000s, because that was when the cocktail really, really took off and became this like ubiquitous girly drink that we know it as today. Okay. And that's because it appeared in the second season of Sex and the City in 1999.
Oh my God.
And that was all it took. After that, this drink was like you couldn't step foot out the door without tripping over a Cosmo after it appeared the first time on Sex and the City. And then it like made several cameos on Sex and the City after that. Like once it broke through, it was all over that show. And for basically like a good decade, it became one of, if not the most popular cocktails in America.
Yeah.
Just because of Sex and the City. But they did the same thing with like designer shoes, designer handbags, cupcakes.
Yes.
Like, you know, everybody loved cupcakes because they went to Magnolia on the show.
Yeah, they made everything poppin'.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eventually, though, probably as we all know, that the Cosmo did sort of eventually become kind of a running joke. The quintessential basic bitch beverage.
Yeah.
This is before pumpkin spice lattes. Became the new basic bitch beverage.
Totally.
People kind of stopped ordering them like in the late 2000s, but they never really fully went away. In fact, actually, a lot of people believe or suggest that the cocktail resurgence of the early 2000s, like when Prohibition bars popped up all over Brooklyn, that kind of thing.
Mixology was it,
It happened in direct response to the ubiquitousness and simplicity of the Cosmo. They're like, no, we're not doing this four ingredient bullshit. We're doing real cocktails.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Totally. But even if that is true, it may or may not be true, but even if it is, Cosmos never fully went away. People still love them. People are still drinking them. They did kind of die back a lot, but, you know, people still love them. In the first Sex and the City movie in 2008, the girls order a round of Cosmos as like sort of like a flashback. They're like, ooh, let's try it again. And they take a sip and everyone's like, ooh, it's so good. And Miranda literally says, why did we ever stop drinking this? And Carrie responds, because everyone else started.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, them.
So we know for sure why the Cosmo blew up in 1999, but we don't know for sure who invented it. Because about a dozen different origin stories, possible origin stories. Some people believe that it evolved from a 1930s era cocktail called a Cosmopolitan Daisy that was made with gin, Cointreau, lemon juice, and raspberry syrup, which sounds delicious, by the way.
Yeah.
Other people believe that it was invented by the gay community in Provincetown in the 60s or 70s.
Because like of that.
P-Town's close proximity to all the cranberries. Some people say that gay men were drinking them in San Francisco in the 70s, but that they were being made with grenadine rather than cranberry juice, and that they were really, really gross. And that like some craft bartender was like, oh, that's pretty in a martini glass. I'm going to make a cocktail that looks like that, but tastes good.
Okay.
Others believe that the Cosmo was invented, well, it actually sort of evolved out of Ocean Spray's quest for easy cranberry juice cocktails in the 60s that I've talked about on the show when we did, what was it? The Seabreeze?
Seabreeze, yes.
Yeah.
There it was their another, big marketing push, right?
Yeah, yeah. There was another really, really popular cocktail that was pushed by Ocean Spray called the Harpoon that is basically a Cosmo without the triple sec. So a lot of people are like, that's where they came from. They just, somebody added triple sec and they're like, it's so cosmopolitan.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I hope that person did not say that because that is lies.
Yeah. Other people believe that it was a play on a kamikaze. There's a lot of stories where it like evolved out of some other cocktail. Bartending legend and author Gaz Regan believes that the original Cosmopolitan was created in 1985 in Miami Beach, another gay Mecca, by a bartender named Cheryl Cook, who added citrus-flavored vodka and cranberry juice to a kamikaze and served it in a martini glass. Others believe that Dale DeGroff came up with the Cosmo at the Rainbow Room in New York, and others still believe that Toby Cecchini first invented them at New York's Odeon restaurant in Tribeca. You know, any number of these could be true, and they might also sort of all kind of happened around the same time with slightly different recipes. A lot of recipes call for citrus-flavored vodka. A lot of just say vodka. We are just drinking vodka today, not the lemon vodka. But either way, we do know, obviously, that Sex and the City like exploded their popularity in 1999, but they were getting really popular in Manhattan throughout the 90s. And that was because of Toby Cecchini at the Odeon restaurant in Tribeca. He was making a recipe that called for absolute citron and Cointreau that like completely exploded in the 90s in Manhattan and spread all over Manhattan. And that's probably why it landed on Sex and the City in the first place, because Odeon was super trendy and everyone wanted to go there and everyone was drinking Cosmos at Odeon.
Okay.
And then, you know, from there it just blew up.
Is Odeon still a bar in New York?
I don't know if they're still around, actually. I should have looked into that, but I don't know. But it was in, if it's not still there, it was in Tribeca, or it may still be in Tribeca.
Okay. I've lost so many of my favorite bars in the pandemic.
Yeah. It was a restaurant, like a super trendy restaurant. It's
probably still around.
But, you know, those kinds of restaurants that are like really trendy tend to fizzle out really quickly. So if it is still there, it's probably not what it was in the 90s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah. It blew up in 1999, 2000 because of Sex and the City, and the rest is history.
And you're not doing a scandal about Y2K?
It's not about Y2K. I should have done that. Damn.
Oh, sorry. Oops.
Did you do anything for, do you remember your New Year's party on Y2K?
Oh, I don't. No, I don't.
We had a big party at my house. Like my mom.
Oh my God, of course you did.
Yeah. My mom went out and left us alone at home, and we invited a bunch of our, you know, teenager friends over to get drunk. Don't tell mom. Sorry you're listening, mom. and right at like 11:59, I snuck into the back room where the circuit breaker was and turned off the power at midnight.
No, you didn't. Yeah. Asshole.
Everyone screamed, but then like someone looked out the window and they're like, the street lights are still on.
Oh, what a buzzkill.
Yeah. But it took a minute for everyone to be like, wait. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's so funny. Good for you.
Yeah. That is...
I was not a cool teen like that. I was probably at home watching the Dick Clark special with my parents. God,
Dick Clark, we are dating ourselves.
I know. God. Add something current. I don't know who's doing it now. Ryan Seacrest, right?
And Ryan Seacrest does it, and what's his name? Andy Cohen and Anderson Cooper and Kathy Griffin.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
The gays are doing it now.
The gays. Yeah. I think John Lemon did it one year and got like really like stinking drunk.
Was it Andy Cohen? I think it was Andy Cohen got really, really drunk last year and totally embarrassed himself.
I love it.
Or maybe it was a few years ago. I
love that for him.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the Cosmos. So should we take a taste?
Yeah.
I've been drinking them.
Okay, good. Mine does not look as pretty. It is not like up.
In a martini glass, yeah.
Yeah, I took a picture. Cheers.
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 Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
When I was a kid at school, learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
It's so much better than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. This is delicious.
It's delicious, right? Yeah.
Wow.
When I was doing the cocktail video, the recipe video, I took a sip and was like, oh, it's good. Like, I didn't expect it to be good. Same. I haven't had one in I have definitely had one before, but it's been so long. And this recipe is delicious.
Yeah, I haven't had one since college.
Yeah.
And I remember liking them and just everyone liking them. I guess maybe I had a few after college, but I definitely stopped when it became like a joke.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's a basic bitch drink, so nobody wants it anymore. They're fucking good. There's a reason they were so popular.
Really, really good.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about pumpkin things, but I don't really care for it.
I like pumpkin baked goods, but not pumpkin beverages. If that makes sense. Like, I'll fuck up a pumpkin roll, like a pumpkin whoopie pie, pumpkin bread.
I do give like me pumpkin all bread. Yeah. Pumpkin bread is real, real good.
But I don't need pumpkin spice in my
coffee. I don't want a pumpkin drink at all. I had some sort of pumpkin fall ale, and I'm like, I didn't eat this.
Oh, yeah. That's such a thing now, Tier.
It was weird.
Pumpkin beer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basic bro beverage.
Absolutely. It's the official drink of Astoria.
Yeah. Amazing. Yes.
Jason's never going to hear this, so I can have my fun.
Amazing. I love it. Yeah, so that's the Cosmo. Surprisingly delicious. Not very Halloween-y. This is the...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It is October. This is the official first October episode of Beyond Reproach, and y'all know what that means. It is spooky season.
It's spooky season.
Yes, we're going to tell scary stories about cosmopolitans. And then Sex in the City made everything blow up.
Story of
everyone's
hype.
Like, ah, no. Yeah, I guess I should dive into my story now.
I suppose. I'm glad I got extra stuff for this because I'm having another one.
Yeah, the last couple episodes, I definitely have not wanted to make a second one during the break, but this episode I probably will because it's delicious.
And it tastes like juice.
And it's kind of strong. There's 2 full ounces of vodka in there and almost an ounce of Cointreau or triple sec. And it's strong, but doesn't taste strong. It's really easy to drink. And it's not too sweet. That's what I like about it. It's
fruity, tiny.
But not too sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the cranberry. There's like a nice tartness to it. Totally. Oh, and the lime juice.
And it's like fresh lime juice that's not sweetened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
It's really, really good.
I guess we got to do it. We got to do this.
Onward.
So last year for Halloween, I talked about a literal monster who also happened to be a political kingmaker because of his rank and power within the KKK. This year, I'm going to be talking about another literal monster, but this one was a lot less powerful and influential.
Okay.
In fact, it may have been his obsession with political power that turned him into such a monster in the first place.
So, I'm also doing a political monster story.
I love a political monster story.
Who doesn't love a political monster story?
I would argue that a lot of our stories are about monsters.
Okay, how dare you? Get out of my brain. That's rude.
But yeah, so for this spooky Halloween episode of Beyond Reproach, I am going to be talking about Byron Low-Tax Looper, a lowly county tax assessor with big dreams and no chill.
Okay.
Looper tried unsuccessfully to run for several different offices in 2 states over the course of 8 years, but he finally set his sights low enough to win his first election, becoming a county tax assessor in rural Tennessee. After an escalating series of schemes, scams, and abuses of what little power he had, He was removed from office in 1999 after a laundry list of misconduct indictments. But by this point, he was already running for another office, Tennessee State Senate. And his last and final campaign would end with one candidate dead and another behind bars for murder.
What?
Yes.
Wow, that took a turn.
So I would like to propose a toast to taking threats of violence seriously.
Cheers.
Cheers. Even if you think that these, you know, threats of violence are too outlandish to be serious, and maybe you think it's a joke, you never know what's going on in someone's head. Take that shit seriously.
Absolutely. I'm like, did he kill people? Did people kill on his behalf? Like,
you're about to find out. So, Byron Anthony Looper was born in 1964 in rural Tennessee, but he spent most of his childhood in Georgia. He knew from a young age that he wanted to be in politics, but things never really seemed to go his way. He attended West Point in 1983, but he ended up having to leave after 2 years because of a knee injury. A few years later... Bone spurs, totally. A few years later, he was elected the president of the Young Democrats of Georgia, but he was asked to resign halfway through his term. I don't actually know what he did that got him sort of ousted from the Young Democrats of Georgia, but that's what happened.
Okay.
Then at the age of 23, he tried to run for the Georgia House of Representatives, but was crushed in the primaries by the incumbent. I mean, you're 23.
He's so young.
He stayed in politics, though. He ended up working on both Al Gore and Bill Clinton's Democratic presidential campaigns in Georgia. But then in 1992, he returned to his hometown in Tennessee and switched parties. I think that he was sort of just like sick of losing elections. He'd been running for a bunch of shit and kept losing. And I don't know this for sure, but I'm assuming that he was like, maybe if I run as a Republican, I'll win. So yeah.
So he just really wanted power.
Exactly. And it didn't like policy, you know, politics didn't actually matter to him. He just wanted to be powerful.
I feel like maybe he's most people.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, whereas you and I are like, no, policy. Like, I care about what somebody's policies are versus, like, personality. I don't give a shit about someone's personality as long as I agree with their politics. But that's not how a lot of people vote. But yeah, so he moved back to Tennessee in 1992. And one reporter said he came here to Cooksville and started immediately running for things. As a Republican, in 1994, he ran for Tennessee House of Representatives and lost yet again. Oh, so he lost a total of 5 elections so far up to this point. But then finally in 1996, just desperate to win something, he finally set his sights low enough and ran for...
Dog catcher.
Yes, literally. Putnam County tax assessor.
Okay. Is he accountant?
Nope, not at all. No.
Cool.
But you know what he had did? to make a name for himself, he legally changed his middle name from Anthony to Low Tax.
Oh my God.
In parentheses. Low Tax in parentheses. That was his legal... Apparently, that's...
You can have parentheses in your name?
In your middle name, if you pay to have it legally changed, I guess.
I mean, I do get the need for, like, the apostrophe, because some people's names have legitimate apostrophes, but there is no reason to have quotes in your name.
Nope.
The fuck?
Literally.
That's crazy.
Byron, parentheses, Low Tax... Looper.
Wait, are you okay? Are you sure though?
Absolutely. Everything I read said that the parenthesis was included in his name legally.
Wow.
Yes.
Just wow. Okay.
Yes. I know, right? It's so shook. Gooped and gagged.
I am gooped and gagged.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Just go on. I'm stunned.
Just take a moment. Breathe.
Actually, let me have a sip of this juice.
Stun.
How dare you? I almost spit that out. Oh my God, I love Gia.
Yes. So yeah, this guy's name literally in print would have to read Byron, parentheses, Low Tax, Looper.
I
in print, in the newspaper, and on the ballot.
That is so fucking gimmicky.
I know.
But it worked.
Exactly. Yeah. So according to a local reporter, quote, he went to court and legally changed his name to Low Tax Looper and promised. Yes. And promised that he would lower the taxes. In reality, the tax assessor does not set the tax rate. But anyway, he started big public quarrels with almost every other office holder in the county for no reason that anybody could see. So during his campaign, he promised to break up what he called the good old boy network in Putnam County. And he claimed that the sheriff, the district attorney, and the county commission, among others, were all in cahoots and promised that if elected, he would expose political corruption. I'm not sure how or why he thought a rural county tax assessor would be able to do all that, but that's what he promised.
He's Batman.
He literally, except poor. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Batman's superpower is wealth. Yeah. Never mind.
Exactly. Yeah. So during his campaign, he refused to make any public appearances or participate in any debates, relying instead on an intensely negative mudslinging campaign against his 14-year incumbent. He accused him of giving his friends, quote unquote, sweetheart tax deals. Which, again, is bullshit because the tax assessor doesn't have anything to do with setting the taxes.
People don't know that.
Exactly. His campaign worked, and he won the election in a landslide.
Damn.
Yes.
Oh, damn.
However, once in office, it became very clear that he wasn't really interested in being a county tax assessor. He just wanted to be elected. He didn't care to what, but he like
what
didn't.
Is a tax assessor? Do you know? Like, it's what, like what a do they even do?
I don't know. I don't really fully know, but like it's a boring, like
bureaucratic.
Yeah. Pencil pushing. Office, yeah.
Looking at budgets.
Like telling people how much their properties are worth and how much tax they have to pay,
of course,
I guess.
Of course, yeah,
based on the value of their homes or something. I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing that's what it is.
Okay.
One former campaign worker said, quote, the thing of it was, once he won, he would never show up for work. Just after the election, he took off to Puerto Rico for weeks.
What? For weeks without
telling anyone where he was going or when he'd be back. He just disappeared and everyone's like, wait, where did he just won the election? Where'd
that
he go?
Is that is bold. Weeks after getting elected, dude. Yeah, like,
just
wait.
Like, poof, I'm gone to Puerto Rico. So when he finally returned to Tennessee, his deputy assessor, Joel Reimer, asked him where he'd been and why he didn't tell anyone that he was going anywhere. But according to Reimer, quote, he became uneasy. He thought his office was being bugged.
What?
Basically, he seems to have had a paranoid nature.
Okay.
So Reimer said that Looper thought that there were hidden cameras in the ceiling in his office. And he later hired a security consultant to scour the building for hidden cameras and microphones.
How old is he at this point? Do you know?
I probably in his like late 20s, maybe early 30s, I'm guessing. I don't know
late
exactly.
20s, okay. I'm just thinking like, when do psychotic breaks happen? They're usually like late adolescence through like 20. Because this is, okay. That's interesting.
He was born in 1964. So he's in his early 30s.
Okay. Yeah. No, this is okay. This is something else. he was hearing things in the ceilings.
Yeah. He hired the security team to scour the building for hidden cameras and microphones. And he also ended up firing about 40 employees from the assessor's office, claiming they were spies.
For whom?
Exactly. Yeah. You're a county tax assessor in rural Tennessee. Nobody gives half a fuck about you.
He had the power to fire 40 people.
I mean, he was, the head of a team, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I can't believe he had 40 people working under him, but
right.
I guess he did. Yeah.
Doing what?
I know.
He fired the janitor. Like,
exactly.
Fired everyone.
He's like, I know that you're spying on me. That mop has a microphone in it. So when he wasn't worrying about spies and hidden cameras, he was trying to use his position as a stepping stone towards higher office. He quickly put together a list of some 400 media outlets around the state. And on the few occasions he would actually show up to the office, he would mostly be there to use office equipment to send out a bunch of press releases, trashing the state's good old boy network and calling himself, quote, the most educated tax assessor in Tennessee.
Wow. Wow.
Yes.
What a guy.
What a Byron Low-Tax Looper.
Low-tax in quotes. Wow.
He insulted his coworkers, infuriated his employees, and talked down to his constituents.
Oh, no, not the constituents. They can catch it, too? Amazing.
The Putnam County executive said his attitude was that we're all dumb, and he was here to save us. He thought he was the smart one, but he kept getting caught.
Oh.
Caught doing what, you ask? We'll find out after this short break.
So, have you ever thought about what would happen if your airline window popped out?
Or if you can build a jetpack using only machine guns.
Well, we found out you could, but you really shouldn't. Hi, I'm Jill Chacha.
And I'm Marissa Riley.
Together, we have one comedy science-y show called, well, that's interesting.
It's for folks who like to learn about weird stuff, like how hair can grow between your teeth and what happens if the moon disappears.
If you need a break from the world or need interesting stuff to bring up at a party when those happen again, come on by.
Find Well That's Interesting wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Back to Low-Tax Looper over here. So despite accusing basically everyone in the county of corruption and schemes and scams, Low-Tax Looper himself was doing the schemes and scams.
I know.
Imagine that. The one making the accusations is the one who's actually doing dirty.
That has never happened before.
In politics? No. Never. Never. So during his short time in office, he was accused of all sorts of dirty shit.
Really?
At one point, land developers said that he had promised them tax breaks in return for political contributions. Yes.
Wow.
And like just so boldly, just like anyone who would listen. I'm the tax assessor. I can give you a good tax break, which is not true at all. So it didn't take long for the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation to find him and sort of do a deep dive on Mr. Low-Tax Looper. In March 1998, he was indicted on 14 counts of official misconduct, theft, and misuse of both county property and county employees.
Theft.
Looper claimed that these charges were simply politically motivated and that he was being persecuted by the Democratic power structure in the county because he was a Republican in a county full of Democrats. In reality, even the Tennessee Republican Party wasn't fucking with him. They publicly came out to say, I don't know her.
Wow.
Literally like, she's not one of us.
Wow.
No, I don't know her. So at the same time all this was happening, he was also being sued by his ex-girlfriend for $1.2 million.
What?
Because she was saying that he had forced her into a sexual relationship and gotten her pregnant. And instead of helping her care for their child, he used his office to defraud her out of the title to her home, signing his name to a fake deed.
What?
A forged deed. Yes, that he made in his office.
Bruh.
Sir. Are you okay, sir?
Wow, that's so bold.
Yeah. When asked about the suit, he claimed that it was only a smear campaign by a bitter ex. And he told the newspaper, quote, she, quote, left me with heart palpitations, a small box of memorabilia, and a red tree string.
Oh, my God.
Ugh. Yes.
He's the worst.
Wow. The worst.
Low tax, man.
So old Low Tax Looper was eventually removed from office in 1999 because of
Was he like impeached or something?
He didn't need to be impeached. He was a county tax assessor.
Oh, that's right. He had no power.
Yeah. But yeah, they were like, no, we're not doing all this. You're a mess. But by that point, he was already in bigger trouble. So in August of 1998, he had decided to primary for the Republican nominations for both Tennessee's 6th Congressional District and Tennessee's State Senate for the 15th District.
Wait, how can you be in two different districts?
It was different positions. They were different districts because of the different positions, but they were both the same, you know.
Area.
He was in both districts at the
same
time.
He was in both districts.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. He basically like ran for both just to hedge his bet.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I'm probably going to lose, but why not run for both positions at the same time and see what happens?
Wow.
So he came in third in the congressional district race, but he actually won the state Senate nomination by default because other Republican candidates ran against him.
Okay, I'm like, how in the world did he win?
No one else ran against him. And that was because this was just the primary for the Republican seat. No one else ran against him, probably because they saw it as an unwinnable race. Since 1978, the seat had been held by Democrat Tommy Burks.
You said 14 years, right?
No, that was the tax assessor.
Oh, that was the tax assessor.
This is a different, Tommy Burks had been in office even longer.
Oh,
since
no.
1978. Yeah, almost 30 years. Yeah.
Dang. Okay.
So Tommy Burks was a well-loved local farmer and an old school conservative Southern Democrat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know what that means. Tommy Burks vehemently opposed abortion, the lottery, and the teaching of evolution in public schools.
The lottery?
Yes, the lottery.
That's a weird one.
I know. Well, I think that might be the Democrat part of it. I don't know. He was trying really hard to push a bill that would make drunk drivers have to pick up trash on the side of the road wearing a vest that said, "I drive drunk," or something like that. And it failed. God. It failed.
Yeah.
I'm like,
so he wants to like shame people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a terrible idea, but the whole teaching, like he tried to get all these books banned about abortion about evolution and tried to pass a law that like
you what could, year is this? This is the 99.
Late 90s. He tried to pass a law that like school districts could fire teachers for teaching evolution and not teaching creationism. Yeah.
Whoa.
It failed.
Okay, good.
But yeah. This is a Democrat, but that's, you know, this is back in the era where like the South, rural South still had some of the like hold-ons from the before times when the Democrats were the bad ones, which is confusing to me because the Republicans were already like, you know, 1998.
Yeah. I'm like, what's the difference between the two?
Exactly. Yeah. He was a, what do you call it? What do they say? Rhino. So he was a dino.
He was the dino. Oh my God. He was, what's his face? The Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Kristen Manchin. Sinema. Yeah, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. Dinos. Yeah.
Dinos.
But anyways, he was very popular in rural Tennessee in Putnam County. Everyone loved him. He had represented the area for nearly 30 years and had reportedly never missed a day of work in all of his years in public service. He was a hog, tobacco, and cattle farmer.
Okay.
So everyone just loved him. He was like folksy and conservative and religious. And so no one thought that Low Tax Looper or any other Republican had a single chance in hell of winning anything against him. But then on the morning of October 19th, 1998, police were called to investigate a likely murder at the Burks farm.
Oh, no.
Yes. Tommy Burks's body was found with his head resting on the steering wheel of his pickup truck, with a single bullet wound above his left eye. The morning had started like any other. Burks was working with his young farmhand, Wesley Rex, trying to get things ready for the annual visit from a local nursery school where children would come.
No.
Yeah, I know. Children were scheduled to come to his pumpkin patch to pick pumpkins to take home for Halloween. Literally every year, the little kiddos would show up and pick pumpkins from his pumpkin patch for Halloween.
No.
And he wound up dead the day they were supposed to come.
They didn't come.
Okay. Yeah, it happened really early in the morning, so the kids didn't come.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So he's working with his farmhand, Wes Rex, and he's sort of like, they're standing around early in the morning trying to get things ready for this visit from the nursery school students. And both of them, Burks and Rex, kind of notice that there's like, they're talking about what they need to do for the day to get ready. And they notice this black sedan keeps driving past them, back and forth, driving past them. And the driver is wearing dark sunglasses and black gloves.
Oh, no.
Oh, and they're God. Like, that's strange. Let's go about our business cleaning up the pumpkin patch and slopping the hogs. Rex is like, okay, I'm going to get to work. And he drives away to another part of the farm. He gets in his truck and he drives off. And as he's in his car driving to another part of the farm, he drives past this black sedan. And he got a good look at the driver's face. And then he got out of the car and was doing his work somewhere else and happened to notice he looked over and saw that the sedan drove up to Tommy Burks's pickup truck and got out, and he heard a loud pop sound, and then he saw the car speed off down the dirt road towards the highway. Yes.
Wow.
So the community was completely shocked.
I can't believe he did this shit in earshot.
Broad daylight in front of witnesses.
Oh my God.
He's wearing sunglasses and gloves in his own car.
Oh my God.
So the community was shocked by Tommy Burks' death, but no one could think of any plausible motivation for this murder.
They're like, do we know anyone stupid enough to do this?
Yeah. Nobody could think of any reason that anyone would want to kill him. But, you know, it didn't take long for people to notice that low-tax Looper seemed to have gone missing and hadn't been seen since the day before the shooting.
Oh, my God. This guy. Suspicious at all.
It also didn't go unnoticed that he never released, like, as a politician, he never released any statement offering his condolences to the Burks family, which all the locals agreed was bad manners.
Oh.
There was like several articles that were like, this is bad manners. He didn't offer his condolences. How rude.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, that's what he should have done, obviously. Yeah. But I just thought it just tickled me that they were like, he wasn't brought up right.
He's a murderer, but like, he didn't do right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He should have sent a condolence. Like, yeah. That would be better.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
But yeah, so the election was less than 30 days away, which legally meant that it was too late for the Democratic Party to add any other names to the ballot.
Oh my God, he did this shit on purpose.
Like, uh-huh.
Like that time frame.
Yes. So low tax Looper was now running unopposed, which many speculate was his only motive.
Wow.
Yes.
Power.
Uh-huh. And like a state senator, not even a senator, not a congressional senator, a state senator in rural Tennessee. This is, you're going to kill someone for this?
I mean, the dude changed his name.
For a tax assessor job. Yeah. That he didn't even want.
He's like willing to do whatever it takes.
Exactly. So Wesley Rex, the young farmhand, had never met Byron Looper before and didn't recognize him the day of the murder. But according to the district attorney, the image that he created with police sketch artists looked exactly like Byron Looper.
Oh my God, hilarious.
Yes. And then a few days later, Rex saw Looper's picture on the news and finally officially identified him as the man he saw driving on the farm that morning. But then investigators got another tip from a high school friend of Looper's. Joe Bond called the police to tell them that Looper had confessed to him to murdering Tommy Burks.
Whoa.
According to Bond, Looper had showed up at Bond's home in Arkansas a few months earlier and said that he was going to be running for office and wanted to kill his opponent.
Oh my God.
Bond, who is a former Marine, thought he was just joking. Looper asked him which gun he should use to kill someone. Bond, as a Marine, was like a kind of a weapons expert. So
wait,
Looper
he said
was,
to kill someone? And he
yeah,
answered?
He's like, I need to know what gun to use to kill someone because I'm going to run for office and I want to kill my opponent.
Okay, but did this dude give him advice?
I don't actually know if he gave him which gun to buy or not. But either way, he was like, he's joking. It was a joke. I didn't
That's
think anything
go to
of
the
it.
Cops.
Uh-huh, right?
That moment is when you go to the cops.
Yeah, he thought he was joking. But then when Looper showed up again around midnight on the day of Tommy Burks's death,
Jesus,
saying that he'd actually done it, Bond said he thought he was still just joking.
No. What will it take for this man
literally
to take his words seriously?
Seriously, yeah. So Bond later testified.
What a funny joke.
I know, hilarious. Ha ha ha, I'm going to kill someone.
And he's dead. And I did it.
Yes, yeah, exactly. He later testified that Looper said, quote, "I did it, man. I did it. I killed that dude." And when Bond asked, "What dude?" Looper said, "That guy I was running against. I busted a cap in that dude's head." I busted a cap in that dude's head.
Oh my God.
What a wild time to be alive.
Wow. Wow. He said those words.
Yes. But wow. Even then,
oh Jesus.
Even Bond then. Thought it was a joke. It wasn't until after Looper left several days later and went back to Tennessee that Bond saw a report about the murder on the news and finally took it seriously.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's bullshit, but okay.
I know, totally. No, apparently he was like saying, telling him while he was there for a couple of days, and he was like, "Oh my God, I got to change the tires on my car because I left tire marks at the murder scene."
Seriously? And he still thought it was a joke?
Hilarious. This guy just doesn't know when to quit.
Oh, no. I'm like, is this how like straight white men joke? Like, should we be looking?
They're so out of touch with their emotions that they're just like, "I killed someone."
This is wild.
I know. So yeah, 5 days after the murder, Looper went home. He got back to his home in Tennessee around 1 a.m. and found police waiting for him to arrest him. And according to police reports, Looper offered the arresting officers sodas and was acting strangely calm and sat there quietly going through his mail on the sofa while he was waiting for his lawyer to show up. Just apparently they didn't take him in right away. They waited for his lawyer to come to the house and he was just sitting on the couch like, "You want a soda? I'm going to look through the mail and see if I got any credit card offers or whatever."
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. That's too much. Wow.
Yeah. So while the investigators were building a case in this murder trial, the Tennessee State Senate race was still continuing ahead as scheduled. Yes. And Low Tax Looper was the only name on the ballot.
But isn't there a way to get him off?
They were trying, but it was like, it was so close to the election. Yeah. That it was really tough and they couldn't figure out like legally. There was nothing. Yeah. They tried to get him off for like moral turpitude or something, but he hadn't been convicted yet. But they couldn't put another name on the ballot legally because, you know, it had to happen within, or it had to happen before 30 days or whatever.
They would have to do write-ins
at this point. So that's what they ended up doing. So Tommy Burks's widow, Charlotte, was urged to step forward as a write-in candidate. And dozens of volunteers helped her campaign. They went around the county. They held up signs on election day on the side of the road, like, "Make sure you write in, Charlotte. Don't vote for
this guy's a murderer.
Low-tax Looper." Yeah. Dozens of volunteers helped her, including state Republicans who were hoping to distance themselves from old low-tax. The state's Republican chairman even said, quote, "We sincerely hope that the voters of this particular Senate district will reject his candidacy. Pulling off a write-in campaign is a very large tax, and Mr. Looper will be the only candidate on the ballot. Those seeking to defeat him will have to make a very hard effort."
Yeah, to get a write-in, to get everyone on board with a write-in.
Totally, totally. But yeah, 2 weeks after her husband's death, Charlotte Burks received 97% of the vote.
Okay, good.
And she ended up going on to being reelected over and over and over again until she retired in 2015.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it took almost 2 years for Looper to finally go to trial in the summer of 2000. Citing local bias, the defense fought to have a change of judge and a change of venue for the trial, which certainly helped delay the trial. But then Looper also changed attorneys 8 times before the trial officially commenced.
So he was going not guilty on this?
Yeah. Yes, hilarious. He was absolutely going not guilty. And some, like, he didn't get along with a lot of the attorneys. One attorney actually submitted like a sealed court document, like, I cannot represent this man, and here's why.
I get it.
Right. Yeah. So he went through 8 different attorneys before the trial officially started almost 2 years after the murder. When he finally had a defense team that would represent him, the defense tried to discredit Joe Bond, saying that he was lying about Looper's confession and that he had only contacted police because Looper hit on his girlfriend.
Oh my God.
He was trying to frame him for murder because he hit on his girlfriend.
Girl, bye.
Mm-hmm. They also relied heavily on testimony from Looper's mother, Reba, and her neighbors, who insisted that her son had been visiting her in Georgia on the morning of the murder. She still insists to this day that her son is innocent.
Oh, okay.
Old Reba, not buying it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the defense didn't stand a chance. There was basically an airtight case from the prosecution.
It's like, hey, my mom says I didn't do it, guys.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. I hit on that guy's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't
kill look
anyone.
At me. I'm just irresistible. I'm sure he's not.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, he is not. He looks like mayonnaise.
I already have a picture.
Yeah.
Looks like mayonnaise.
he looks like Miracle Whip.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I kind of fuck with Miracle Whip, and I judge myself. It's I grew up in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, as did I, but my grandmother loved Miracle Whip, but I did not. Yeah. I'm a gourmand.
You were a little gourmand in the 90s, turning your nose up.
I would eat ramen and Doritos, but no Miracle Whip for me. Where were we?
you were out there eating Cool Whip, though. So.
Frozen, yes.
Oh, my God.
Delightful. But yeah, so one of the prosecuting attorneys said, quote, he didn't leave DNA at the scene. He left a bullet at the scene. He left tire tracks at the scene. He left an impression of who he was on a young man at the scene. Along with testimonies from Wes Rex and Joe Bond, 2 political consultants also came forward and testified that Byron Lotax Looper had approached them, both of them, wanting their help running a political race. He thought his best bet for winning was to murder his opponent during the election.
Oh my God.
And
none of these people talked.
Literally. What are you doing?
What the fuck is going on?
He told at least 3 different people.
Who did he tell? He told his barber.
Totally. Yeah.
The guy at the deli counter.
I'm going to kill somebody. What gun should I use? Yeah.
It's like, sir, this is a Home Depot. Like,
you're
what are
so
you doing?
Funny. Yeah.
Wow.
You crack me up, you son of a bitch.
Speechless. I don't understand how so many people were just like, oh, him. What?
Yeah. So after just over 2 hours of deliberations, Looper was found guilty of first-degree murder. And at the request of the Burks family, he was sentenced to life in prison rather than sentenced to death. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But he actually died in prison in 2013 at the age of 48.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Something about his heart and like overdosing on antidepressants or something. I don't know. Blood pressure, et cetera.
Okay.
So Tommy Burks's daughter, when he died, came out and said that she wished that Looper had not died so young. Basically sort of saying like he deserved to suffer longer in prison. Yeah. But she went on to say, quote, when someone does something that heinous, the hate in your heart is bad and you wish terrible things on people. But when he died, it didn't change anything. My daddy was still gone.
Yeah.
But not everyone had such a generous view of Lotax Looper's death. A former colleague of Burke's said, quote, for me personally, it's good riddance to bad rubbish. That man killed my friend. He killed a father, a grandfather. He assassinated a political leader in an attempt to take over. It's probably not the Christian thing to do, to say that you're glad that someone is dead, but I've got to tell you that there's a grim satisfaction in it.
I mean, I understand.
It kind of does sound like the Christian thing to do, to me.
an eye for an eye.
It sounds just like what a Christian would say. And I'm glad someone is dead, but that's for another story.
Yeah. Wow. What a journey.
Yes.
That's
the story of Byron Low Tax Looper.
So I'm curious just to know how you found out about this guy.
So because it's October and I wanted to do a spooky story, I literally Googled like political murderer.
Okay. Oh, you did. Yeah. Oh,
that's actually how I found DC Stevenson from last year too. I found both of them at the same time and was like, oh, Stevenson's story is like bigger because it involves the KKK and all this other stuff. But this story is still like, it's kind of a different sort of a story for me. I usually like a bigger story that like points to current times and like the way the system works today. And like, I like a politician that had more power and that kind of thing. I like a story that's like foundational, you know?
Yeah.
But like this story is just so fucking scandalous. It's so over the top. Like literally,
like,
dude,
he was so bad at crime and bad at his job.
You're doing so much for so little. To win an election in rural Tennessee as a tax assessor, some weird-ass rural county that nobody knows about, you're going to change your name legally? And then you're going to kill someone for state Senate?
Yeah.
Ooh. Dude.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, my glass is empty.
Mm-hmm. Yep, same. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's, sorry, before we wrap it up, I do just want to say, like, it's really, I don't even know what the right word is, disappointing and like sad that he told so many people that he wanted to kill someone.
Right.
Did anything.
Everyone just let it ride. It makes me really, this was Tennessee. Like, is everyone just going around telling, like talking about murder? That it's so,
I mean,
it's not surprising.
I wonder how he put it, because I've said like, oh, I want to kill them. You know what I mean? Like, there's a way to say it that like clearly sounds like you're just angry and you're not really.
I mean, the thing about the tire marks, that's too much.
Literally to show up and say, not to say like, I'm going to kill him, but to say, I did kill him, busted a cap in that dude's head.
I mean, I get thinking that's a joke because who the fuck says that?
Totally. Yeah.
But asking what type of gun to use? Like in a serious way, because
and then to say
to
literally, I
off.
Need to change my tires because I left tire marks at the crime scene.
Yeah, how
and
is
you're
that
like,
funny?
Ha, 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 what a funny joke! You're such a jokester, you.
But I think this is how like straight men are with each other. They never want to go like even like a tiny bit beneath the surface. It's like, wait, there's something I need to do now.
Yeah.
Like I'm now responsible.
Like my friend needs help. He has right. You know, my friend has distress and my friend is in distress and I can't deal with it. So
no,
I'm just going to make it into a joke.
Yeah. He just pats him on the back. You'll be fine.
Yeah. What? Buck up. Yeah.
The fact that he told, it sounds like literally everyone about what he did going to do and then did.
Yeah.
And no one, like, it took a moment for someone to be like, oh, wait.
Well, I mean, it took a murderer for him to be like, wait, oh, he actually did do it. Even, you know, he did do the thing that he told me he did do.
But just imagine just being his friend, like the type of person who could be his friend.
I know. Well, the thing was, they had been friends in high school, but like kind of fell out of contact. And then like he didn't actually speak to him again until he showed up in Arkansas a few months before the murder to ask, what gun should I use? Like, hey, high school friend that I haven't seen in years and years.
Oh, so they weren't even friends, really.
Exactly. He's like, hey.
Oh, that's even more suspicious. Yes. He should have went to the... Oh, that's... Okay. Wow. Okay. I think I missed that detail. That's outrageous.
Yeah. I didn't say that during... I cut that from my, it turned out in my research, but I cut it from the outline because there was just so much like minutia of the trial.
But thank you for bringing this outrageous murder like the worst murder, the most obvious murder. You're doing
so
a murder
stupid,
in
stupid, so
like,
bad.
Broad daylight, someone else can hear. You're not you're wearing gloves in your car. You're telling everyone that you're about to kill someone.
Driving your own car, showing up in the middle of the day in broad daylight.
Then going missing. Like, that's not suspicious as fuck. Like, wow. It's like, could he have done anything else more wrong? Like,
I know. He's just being maligned by the democratic power structure, Stephanie.
Yes. Yeah. Someone's against him. They're plotting. Mm-hmm. It's a conspiracy, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
Just, you know, close your eyes.
They just wanted that sweet, sweet tax assessor job.
Everyone was just jealous of low tax Looper, man. It's just,
I mean,
look at him.
Yeah.
It's because he hit on their girlfriends.
I know. I hate it when mayonnaise hits on my girlfriend.
Oh, it's worse. But yeah, my drink has been empty for a moment now.
Same. She's long gone.
Yeah. R.I.P. Cosmo. You were missed. So America's history is juicy. We just add vodka, cranberry, a little bit of lime juice, and some triple sec or Cointreau.
If you're fancy.
If you're fancy. I'm not fancy. I think I'm going to put this on Instagram, just like how my drink looks versus how yours. Like do it side by side. Totally. I've already taken a picture and it's
okay.
It's real sad.
Amazing. Yeah. I love that.
So thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lurzel. Tux Low Tax Lurzel.
Oh my God. Quote, low tax. Unquote.
Parentheses. Yes.
Oh, incredible. Just to me, he feels like a short king. You know?
Right.
He's giving
absolutely.
Short king vibes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you to our new editor, Dev. We could not do this without him. Thank you. Absolutely not.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Oh my God. Short king vibes. Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.